Welcome to this episode of the ISF Podcast from the Information Security Forum, the leading authority on cyber, information security, and risk management. I'm Tavia Gilbert, and I'm glad to welcome you back to another cutting-edge conversation tailored to CISOs, CTOs, CROs, and other global security pros. In every episode of ISF's media, Managing Director Steve Durbin speaks with rule breakers, collaborators, culture builders, and business creatives who manage their enterprises with vision, transparency, authenticity, and integrity. And he brings that conversation to you, your teams, and your partners. Today, Steve welcomes motivational speaker, corporate consultant, and educator Reggie Butler back to the podcast. Reggie last connected with Steve in 2018 for an episode of our video cast, and if you haven't heard it, definitely check it out. We'll drop a link in the show notes so you won't miss it. Reggie is an expert with over 30 years of experience in delivering transformative learning solutions within the private and corporate sectors, so he's the perfect person to hear from as workplaces and workforces continue to deal with transformation during COVID-19. Today's conversation focuses on what we've learned through the experience of working from home during the pandemic, strategies for uniting teams even while socially distanced, and why leaders should model vulnerability and transparency now more than ever.
Reggie, it's been just over 2 years now since we last spoke in Vegas, and really glad to have you back. You're actually the first guest that we've invited back on the podcast. So I don't know whether that's an honor or not, but
I was going to say, is it because you couldn't find anybody else, and I'm the only one that said yes?
Not at all. So I wanted to start out with this. You know, it has been a really tough year for pretty much everybody. But how's it been for you? How are you doing?
So I am doing. I'm an aggressive optimist. So I believe when bad times happen, more good will come out of it than bad. So I've always just remained optimistic about what the future holds. Now, it doesn't mean I'm not experiencing my own set of challenges that I need to work through or navigate, but that's just like everybody else. But I make the literal choice of making sure what happens next all stays in that positive lane. So with that in mind, I'm doing pretty good.
That's good to know. Now, you're also an expert in helping companies support their people in doing their best work. You know, that was some of the stuff we talked about last time. At the best of times, that takes a huge amount of commitment. It takes a really healthy culture to bring out the best in, in the talent pool. Now, during the pandemic, workplaces, people's lives have been completely disrupted. So I'm wondering, what are some of the trends you've seen amongst your clients during the pandemic in terms of things like restructuring work, recalibrating work? Just tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So I'm seeing across, I would say, a fairly large number of our clients that have made the choice to pivot faster. When the pandemic first happened and people weren't real sure about what to do, they didn't really know what was coming next. And then they realized fairly quickly that this is life altering and it's going to change our business modeling. So we've got a lot of clients that are saying, we don't need to wait to see what happens. We need to create what happens next. And in some of those trends, if you look at like one of the topics about flexible work arrangements. So a lot of companies have always talked about flexible work arrangements and who gets to work from home and who doesn't get to work from home and all those types of things. What most people have decided is that it is relevant that we're talking about giving people what they actually need to be successful. And it's not a question about flexible work arrangements. It's about what does a person need. And what COVID sort of gave the world is you have very few options on where you get to work. And so a lot of my companies are going, let's create the foundation for where people can get their best work done and still navigate this thing called life. And that's where I see some of my top tier clients moving toward. It's like, we cannot skip the fact that some of our people are dealing with the integration of life and business and they can't turn it off.
Right.
So when we say we're going to give people what they need to be successful, we're also talking about life gifts at the same time.
Okay. And tell me a little bit more about that. Give me some examples. Build that out a little bit for me. Because that's, I think that's a really important point you're making there.
I'll do it in a couple of levels. So if I look at it from a business leader's point of view down to their organization, they'll say, what do we need to put in place that is actually relevant for our people. And so let's look at how many meetings we do. Typically, when we were in our offices, we had X amount of meetings a day. Now that we are working remotely, we have noticed a trend that we have more meetings.
Right.
And it's like, how is that actually possible? That we have more meetings now than we did when we were in our buildings. And what some leaders are starting to say, one of the things we're going to start to create is, it's called screen relief. We want to make sure that nobody's on a screen past 2 hours at a time, that there has to be a break. Okay. And that's because of just the mental stress and fatigue that it takes us to be engaged virtually. And I've got a lot of clients that are saying there are no, and I'll just use Zoom as a platform as an example, but everybody's on a different platform. There are no virtual meetings from 11 a.m. wherever you are to 12:30.
Okay.
And I asked one of my, it was a VP of HR. I was like, why are you all doing, why those specific hours? And they said, so if you look at people who are managing their home life and they're doing school at home and all these types of things, that 11 o'clock hour, as I focus grouped my team, is probably one of the most critical hours for the family to get together and start to transition from one half of the day to the next half of the day. And their normal rhythm, literally for when they had meetings in buildings, was to have that 11 to 12:30 meeting and people would talk over the lunch. So the muscle was felt right. Then they went, this is absolutely the opposite right now.
Right.
So what I should be doing is freeing people up from 11 to 12:30 versus saying, remember we used to always grab your lunch, get on screen and let's keep going. It's like, no, because it's not just them. Mm-hmm. It's their entire family or for some people, their support structure that needs to pivot throughout the day. So that's one example.
Right.
The other example I have, I wish I could say it was novel, but it just sort of wound up being common sense, is to make sure that when people are having their virtual meetings, that they are looking at the amount of time they're spending. So there are some people that are saying, we just don't do hour meetings anymore. Like I can get out what I need to say about the business and the updates through email.
Right.
I can send notes. I can give people things to read. And then when we get on the call, it's a lot shorter because they already had the information. We were so used to in my company to have an hour meeting, maybe an hour and a half. And we would talk about, you present the business update, you do this part, you talk about the targets in the market. And then we would get to sort of the people and team dynamics. It says we just sort of intentionally short-circuited that version of it. And we let people do pre-read on their own. And so when we got together, we were actually making stronger human connections about business because I freed them up from just being in listen modality. That just shouldn't seem surprising, but they had no reason to think any differently up until what happened this year.
No, that's right. It's about breaking some of those patterns, yeah. I guess, that we've fallen into, right?
Yeah.
I was reading something that you'd said the other day as well about, and I really like this phrase. You described bringing your home to work as, mm-hmm. and you talk about the complex paradigm that that introduces, you know, the physical environment, the relational mm-hmm. environment, and the requirement for sheer time. You know, you've got to invest time to create new patterns and that kind of thing. Tell us a little bit about that. Build out on that for me a little bit, if you will, because I think a lot of people listening to this, you know, they can relate easily to perhaps the mm-hmm. physical environment piece, but the relational, and that's something that perhaps a lot of people really don't take the time to think through.
So what I want most people to sort of hear is you've done nothing wrong in how you pivoted toward this new existence. So there's nothing wrong. But to create what I'm going to call just the pause of thought long enough to evaluate, reevaluate, and actually make some different decisions moving forward. If you don't take the time to do, and I sort of coined this phrase in one of my podcasts. If you don't take the time to do your homework, mm-hmm. meaning look at your home first and look at how that home breathes and makes decisions about how to function, you can't actually do your business work. And what we had people do, they get thrust into working from home and they didn't pay attention to all the nuances of how their home functions. That means taking some time, deliberate thought, good to go, where is my workspace? It worked when I was going to work and coming back because I didn't have to sit there the whole time. It was like just this one space and it was my space. Now that I am, it's almost like a co-work space now. So people's homes have become this high definition co-work space where everybody's trying to get something done in a productive way, but they never paid attention to even the navigation of furniture. And I was coaching somebody and they said to me, you know what? I just realized that the way my house is set up, it was set up for convenience and respite. So right. I would come home, I had a chair in a certain place, it faced a certain window, I could face the TV screen or whatever it was. And now I'm realizing that the respite areas need to change because those same areas are where I'm most creative. Those same areas are where I can get most of my work done versus the separation between home and work. Most people would go home, they would have their living area, and then it would go into an office area. Right. But they never intended to stay there that long. That's why it was cut off from everything else. Now you've got an entire home trying to navigate a co-work space. And it's like, you know what? I need to be up. I need to figure out how to make quiet happen, but I also need to share this space with a lot of other people. And I don't mean a lot is a large family. I just mean other people.
Right.
And without giving yourself time to think about that, you typically fall into what I'm just going to call some negative pitfalls that you can't get out of because you create tensions that you didn't mean to create just because you're trying to be productive. And everybody just wants to have a productive day. The other piece. So if I move over into having a conversation with your manager or with the people on your team at work about the work you need to do at home is a critical step people have missed. So people have been working at home, changing everything around so they can be more attentive. They can be more present. They can be more productive. And haven't said once to the people on their teams, this is what I'm doing to make it work for me.
Right.
Because that best practice could work for some other people on their team. I've had more teams get closer virtually, which seems weird, but they're closer now than they were before, only because they're sharing how they've navigated this thing called balance now, this integration of home and business and work.
Yeah, that's certainly something that I've noticed with the ISF team. You know, I think this year has been probably one in which we have come together much more. And you know the team, you met them in Vegas at the Congress. Mm-hmm. They spend a lot of time with each other. But it was really interesting for me to just notice that point you've just made where when you have to share and you want to share, but you're doing it remotely, you become much tighter as a unit. So I think that's a really good observation. In a previous podcast, I was talking to Sir Bob Geldof, and he was also talking about this point of, you know, how do you make the most of space? And he made an interesting comment as well that he felt very fortunate in that, of course, you know, he wasn't living on the 18th floor in a one-bedroom apartment with three kids. So he had that. But of course, there are very many people who have to do that, and they have to adapt their working space to that kind of environment. And so how can they do that? I mean, give us some tips in that space.
Yeah, there's a couple of things. You know, I spend a lot of time trying to help people navigate like what their now is. Forget next. It's like, how do you navigate now? And some of that literally deals with their ability to look at their environment and say, where are my most productive moments and times? And when am I at my best? And what that could mean in context is that in the mornings, I'm at my best. And I need to make sure my team understands that that's when I'm at my best. But if I look at my home, though, and I start to have the conversation about I'm in a very small space, and even though my morning is my most productive, it may not be in this space. So first of all, what do I need to do to this physical space to make it match my most productive moments when my energy is at its highest? Or is there another space within this facility that I can go to? And I've had some people only think that they were quarantined, meaning in their, whatever the square footage of their apartment or whatever it is. And the reality is there are other spaces for people to go, but they didn't consider them until about 3 or 4 months into the quarantine and lockdown. And they went, wait, there are other spaces I can go to. And it's not with other people. I just never thought I could be there because those spaces that they are now seeing are empty. Right. And that's why we didn't notice them. They used to not be empty. They used to always be crowded, hallways, staircases, right outside on a park bench. It's like, of course I can do that. So here's what I had a client do. They said, I want to make sure that everybody is using alternate spaces to have at least 2 meetings a week. If we're going to be together and we're going to have to do all these calls, we're going to try to keep them short, but you have the option of twice a week of taking your call in a different location than you are right now. And I'm all about physical health and mental health. You can do a walking meeting outside.
Right.
And so what they told the people to do was like, just like a podcast, like put on your headphones, dial in. I don't need to see you. You don't need to be sitting at the couch. Like you can walk and listen. Mm-hmm. And if you have, and I'm giving you the option of talking or not, just doing that for a human gave them all sorts of license to make different decisions about how they navigate their physical space, which translated into higher productivity, higher morale, and the ability to be more innovative with their team. And it was a best practice that they created, and they shared it across the rest of their client space, which made all the difference in the world for them.
I think some really good tips in there. I mean, I also want to talk to you a little bit about how, and you've touched on it already, you know, how certain leaders have responded to the needs of their of their people. But let's go into that in a bit more detail. And this series of the podcast that we're doing now is all about leadership. So for you, what does powerful leadership, leadership with integrity, actually entail today in the kind of pandemic situation that we are in with all of the sorts of difficulties that we've been talking about? You know, leaders listening to this, what are the sorts of things they need to work on?
The first pillar of leadership that I look at for right now is I try to get most of my leaders, when they sit in positions of influence where they make decisions about other people's lives and how they do their work, I tell them, you have to move from being reactive to responsive. Now, when you're reactive, the decisions are a lot shorter and you make them pretty quick without a lot of thought. Doesn't mean it's not thought, it's just not a lot. When you're responsive, you pause before you make the decision that may impact a group of people. So I try to get leaders to do two things as they're moving up. First of all, pause for yourself, like create space for you to think instead of react to what is coming at you, either externally or internally. And leaders that are actually taking the pause and making it a powerful tool for them and a skill, I've had some leaders say, I actually never do that and didn't realize how valuable pausing is. So I started to create the pause. Really powerful leaders are in spaces right now where they're creating space for themselves, but they're also creating space for other people.
Let me just come in there, Reggie, because this is interesting. I remember us 2 years ago, you asked me a question. You said something like, what do you do in a certain situation? And I said, I pause, I stop. Mm-hmm, and you said something to me, which I still remember, which is, if I don't know you, if I'm not in the same rhythm as you, if I don't understand your cadence, I'm going to think you've given up because you're no longer present. Yeah. Now, there seems to be a little bit of a contradiction in what you're saying to me now versus what you said to me then, or am I just not getting it?
Oh, no, I don't, you know, and I'm not going to say you're not getting it. You take me through the lens of your truth, though. So your truth where you sit is you're looking at the pause as something where it may be perceived by someone else. And I'm saying the answer to that is to tell people that's what you're doing.
Got it.
So the leaders that are taking the pause, they go, look, I'm telling everybody, I'm taking some time to be thoughtful about this. I'm not going to give you an answer today on what we should do about this problem or this process or this project. Let's give ourselves some time to think about it. Without telling them, it could give any number of perceptions. It could give the perception of you've given up. It could give the perception of you don't care. Mm-hmm. It could give the perception of you're not interested in and fill in whatever blank you want. But if you tell people that's what you're doing, you then have solved the big question mark that's in their head and on their heart about why you're acting the way you're acting. So it's about being visible with your intentions, because intentions are everything, especially if you're able to articulate them.
Right. So introducing this higher degree of transparency, of openness, of sharing, I guess, which I have to say, you know, from at the beginning of the pandemic, I found tough.
Yeah.
I really did find that tough to do, because a lot of people, I think, and I'm sure others listening to this can relate, as a leader, you're expected to make some of the decisions. You feel as well a lot of pressure to make some of those calls. And I think that, you know, just giving yourself that time does mean that you make a better decision, but you've got to have the courage to actually go there in the first place, right?
Yeah.
was the difficult step for me in that one. I don't know whether other people have said something similar to you.
Yeah. You know, I will tell you something else. So while it was hard for almost anybody, and it created some levels of fear, uncertainty, and doubt, normal human behavior based on what's going on, normal. Mm-hmm. What I tell people, one of the new skills is to pay attention to the pillars of EQ and start to think about self-management and redirect your energy towards self-management first. Because if you can manage you, you can then, you're more capable and have the capacity to manage others. And what I've seen people do in the pandemic, and when any business changes dramatically, what we see people doing is trying to manage other people first.
Right.
So let me manage my people. let me manage all the projects and all the tasks. And it's super transactional. And I'm saying, stop. Self-management. So start with you. Manage your, you know, lens of fear, uncertainty, and doubt. Articulate that in a voice that your people understand you're working on something. But it's super important for leaders to do, because when you can do self-management and then show through either role modeling or by example that that's okay for your people to do, then you have people taking care of themselves, the self-care piece, and then taking care of each other. Because right after self-management is awareness of other people. So I push really hard on getting leaders to, in that pause, make sure that they're taking care of themselves. I'm going to give you a quote I heard so long time ago. You can't pour from an empty cup. Mm-hmm. I think that's so powerful.
Yeah.
It is so powerful. If my cup is empty, I certainly can't help anybody. So you have to think about what you need to do to refuel, re-energize, all those different types of things. Along that same line, and if you take reactive and responsive and you do self-management first, I also want people to figure out where they're spending their time. So Steve, when you were going through the pandemic, where did you find yourself spending your time as it relates to getting your job done? Were you spending your time thinking about the organization and your team, or were you spending your time thinking about all the projects that needed to get done and how you would do it differently? What was the first thing you found yourself spending time on?
The first thing certainly was on the people. Mm-hmm. And I guess part of that is because we are a people business. You know, we're mm-hmm. hugely dependent on the people that go to make up the ISF and the way in which they work with the member community all around the world. So mm-hmm. making sure that they were okay, that they had the right infrastructure in place, the ability to still function even though away from the office, that was certainly the first priority, and trying to make that as easy for them as possible. Mm. And I think we've continued through in that vein. I mean, you know, I remain very concerned about things like mental health. You touched on that very briefly earlier on. I think a lot of people forget the need that we have for pure social interaction and how much we rely on that in the business or office environment mm-hmm. to get things done.
Yeah.
And so we've had to reinvent to use what is a really alien environment. You know, there's a big difference between the conversation we're having now. We're doing it remotely. We're doing it over Zoom. I see you, you see me. But there's a massive difference between that and the conversation we had in Vegas.
Yeah.
Simply because we were together.
Absolutely. And I think that one of the things that's really important, and I agree with you, we are social creatures first. Like, even introverts are still social creatures. I had somebody tell me one day, I'm starting to miss the people I don't like. I just need to be around some people. And I certainly understand that. And what they're saying is the connectivity that we have, the tissue that binds us together, it's necessary for us to function. And so any leader that right now is creating pathways for people to have some connective tissue is a really important step that you can't skip. Mm-hmm. If I think of when we were in buildings and we would go to meetings, and I would sit and talk to you and five or six other people in this meeting. Then we would get up from that meeting. Think about this for a minute. We would get up from that meeting, and while there was another meeting coming up, we would stop and talk along the way
yeah.
to all our humans.
Yep.
We had all those humans to talk to, and we would make all sorts of decisions. And most leaders know this. Decisions usually aren't made in a meeting. They're made between the meetings. Mm-hmm. In the pre-meeting or the post-meeting, that's when decisions are made, and you just sort of like review it in the meeting. Here's what's missing for most people that they don't understand. The gap between one meeting and the next meeting has been stripped away from us. Mm-hmm. So any kind of connective tissue that we used to have, where I could stop by somebody's desk, check on them, see how they're doing. I could get some ideas from somebody and see what they had that may be helpful. I could see what's going on with my team, whether it's explicit culture or subcultures. Like, I could get all that information. The gap has been removed from us, and leaders' jobs right now is to reinvent the gap. You've got to find a way to make the connective tissue not atrophy because you haven't paid attention to it. So if you do it on purpose, you wind up having a better outcome. You have more cohesion on your team, which is what I'm seeing people do. And, you know, I always talk about now to next. So let's focus on now. How are we going to get to next? Let's focus on now. How are we going to get to next? And there's sort of three steps I want you to sort of lock into. And I hope this is helpful for people who listen. So one of the things is you have to adjust your current now. Make whatever adjustments you need to do. And people that actually take the time to actually do this actually get to go to the second step. And the second step has to do with adopt a different mindset, a different way of doing things. Go ahead and adopt it. Because if you can't adjust and you can't adopt, you can't advance. So adjust, adopt, advance. And I put that frame on some of my mentees and some of my coaches, and I go, just think about it. What do you need to adjust right now? You may need to adopt a new mindset, because that new mindset is what's going to help you advance the agenda, whatever the agenda is. And people who sort of take that on, there's an arc of time where those three steps happen. Some of the adjustment has nothing to do with work at all. It's everything to do with life. What do I need to adjust in my life right now to be able to meet the needs of everything that's going on? And my new mindset is, I keep waiting to go back to the new normal, and that doesn't exist. So my new mindset is, let's not talk about normal, let's talk about next.
Right.
And that's just a new way to look at it. Then you can make some advancement, you can make some progress. And that's what I hope people are, I want people to cut themselves some slack, show a little grace, because everybody's having a very different lived experience in 2020 that they didn't see coming and have never had to navigate before. And like any new skill, it's a series of micro habits over time that create next.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. You know, people do have a tendency, don't they, to be hard on themselves?
Mm-hmm.
I want to go back to something that you said just now about the meeting taking place before the meeting, if I could put it that way. And this, mm-hmm. this resonates with me, because we had our Congress just a few weeks back. And one of the things that we were talking about in that was the role of the information security officer in the boardroom. Mm-hmm. And we ran a session where I think a lot of people were expecting to hear about all sorts of hints and tips about what to do in the moment. You know, you've got this 10-minute slot in the boardroom. And the real point that I was making at that is that actually the real stuff happens outside the boardroom.
Yes, yes.
Not in
yes.
there. So yes. you should be planning for outside the boardroom, not inside. If you plan yeah. outside, by the time you get in, the job's done.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people are quite surprised by that. But it just seemed to me that it resonated with your point about, you know, it's the walk and talk on the way to, yeah. on the way from, where a lot of the business gets actually done.
Yeah. Steve, and I think, because I remember some of your team, and one of the things that made your team click was the ability to be social and business integrated at the same time.
Yeah.
So you would have a level of humor, you would know people's stories, and what people haven't done because of the pandemic, they haven't had permission to try to understand somebody's story, because the story is in this time of angst and anxiety. So most people don't want to be put on the spot to have to share their story. The best teams that are performing right now know people's stories. They know what they're going through. They know what they're dealing with, and they're able to provide support if needed. That's a very different team to be on than a team where I'm sort of hiding what's going on with me, not hiding who I am, but hiding what's going on. And I just hope people hear this, is that we may be social distancing, but we need to figure out how to distant social. We have to figure that out. How can we still be social at a distance? Because it's so important for a person to feel like they belong, like they're a part of something. And way too many people that were isolated way before COVID, think about it. They were already in an isolated environment
yeah.
for whatever reason. They're even more isolated now. So if you don't create some social mechanisms across a distance, you're gonna lose those people. And I know way too many people that are considering not staying with the job force in its current state, because they're not connected. I'm like, no, that's on a leader to make sure a person at a distance is remaining. There's some social engagement that happens that makes a person feel like they're a part of something.
It's a good point. So how could a leader go about doing that, Reggie? What are the sort of top tips for somebody listening to this thinking, you know, he's got a really good point, but I don't know where to start?
So start again, I'm gonna go back to self-management a little bit, but start with, you know, adjusting how you're thinking about what social connections look like. Just because you think it's having a social hour or those types of things doesn't mean the people on your team think that. So you, again, back to my adjust, you have to adjust and adopt new ways of thinking about it. But a clear example was someone who said, I realized that I don't know what's going on in my people's lives because I never told them what was going on in mine. Mm-hmm. So as a leader, I'm gonna start to be more vulnerable, not fully, but I'm gonna start to do what's called, I call it passive permissions. So you're setting out this lane of permissions by using yourself as the first destination marker. So I'm gonna give you my example of what I'm dealing with to set a permission path for those that says, well, he's going through it or she's going through it. Maybe it's okay for me to share my version. And it looks different. It doesn't mean it'll be on a Zoom call. It just means I now have permission because my leader modeled it.
Right.
So giving permissions is one thing. The second thing is to follow through. So, and this is where it gets a little bit messy. So let's say you set the permission path up and you share what's going on. It's like, I am navigating as your leader. I am navigating Zoom school, which I realize I'm not that good at. I don't know how my kids are going to get out of this grade they're in because I helped them take a test and they didn't pass. And I've realized it's me. So I'm dealing with that. I'm also dealing with, I have a parent in assisted living. Mm-hmm. And I have only been able to see them through this 15-minute window visit. And it's like driving me, but I'm dealing with that. I'm also dealing with, I have a child that's in another city and I already hadn't seen them in a year just based on schedules. And now I haven't seen them at all because I don't make that kind of time. Like, we never had that kind of relationship. We'd see each other, but we didn't always talk to each other on the phone. Mm-hmm. That's all going away. So think about a leader who's saying those things to their team. And then the team says at some point, even if it's one-on-one to each other and not the leader, you know what? I was glad to hear her talk about that because I'm dealing with some of those same things. And I now feel like maybe I can share something that I'm dealing with. I'm dealing with somebody in assisted living. And oh, by the way, here's what we were able to do to make that not as painful. And I think I'm going to bring that up on the next team call. It's like, great. But the leader has to model that. That's a tactic that people can do to create social connection through sharing your story first. The follow through happens is when somebody does share their story, are you being helpful versus I just listened to it. So thanks for telling me your story. And okay, there's nothing I can do, but thanks. And it's like, well, that's not helpful. Like if the person shared their story, there was a reason. And we know this from just, you know, human behavior. There's a reason a person shares their story. So when they share their story, you're supposed to, as a leader, ask the question, not in a group setting, is there anything I can do? Because if you never say the words, the person doesn't know you're thinking it and doesn't know if you intend to ever do anything. So say it. Say it. Own it. Acknowledge it. Is there anything I can do? And the person may go, no, thanks. But they also may go, no. And in their head go, not yet. Mm-hmm. But I needed you to know. So that when it looks like my work performance is starting to decline just a little, or the quality of what I'm delivering is off just a little, you now know why. And what I may ask you is for a little bit of a reprieve on a deadline. But if you never knew the story and you didn't know what I was going through, you wouldn't be able to be helpful when it was applicable. That's a very different leadership relationship.
You're absolutely right. And I think that there's been some really good tips, insights into how leaders can be more authentic, how they can deal better with what unfortunately looks to be a situation that's going to roll on into next year with the pandemic. So it's been great talking to you again, Reggie. Always good to spend some time. And as I say, some really valuable insights there that I'm sure our listeners will take away.
Yeah.
Thanks very much indeed.
You know, and Steve, so I'm going to say this to you, and this is for all listeners too. So I want people to sort of index more on the humanity side of the equation. All businesses are still going to be businesses. They're still going to do what they do. But let's be more human-centered than project-centered. Because this pandemic caused everybody to just think about the projects and how we're going to stay afloat or how we can gain more market share. And they didn't stop and go, what about my humans? Mm-hmm. Like, let's look through the lens of humanity. So I offer that to everybody, take a more human-centered approach, and you will still get to the same business outcome. And from me to you, Steve, I love you. I'm just going to say it. I love you. I figure with the way the world is shaped, you know, people are hating each other for no reason. I figure I can love people for no reason. So
fantastic.
I love you. By the way, that's not a Reggie quote. I found that somewhere online and I'm living my life through it. So don't attribute it to me, but I think it is so true. It's so powerful. I love you and I need you to go make somebody else have a good day.
That's right? Fantastic. Hugely powerful way to finish. I love you too, Reggie.
Okay. I see. I was waiting for you to say it.
Reggie, always right. A pleasure. Thanks very much indeed.
Thank you.
As we wrap up this final episode of our season on leadership, It's such a pleasure to hear Reggie's perspective, which has only grown in its wisdom, courage, humor, and affirming authenticity. And I especially appreciate Reggie's assurance that the best teams know their people's stories, and that authentic relationship allows them to better provide support for each other whenever needed. That's certainly been the case for this podcast team, and it's allowed us to grow closer as we've worked together to navigate the uncertainty and the seismic change that this year has presented. I hope that this season of Conversations on Leadership has been useful to you as you've navigated your own uncertainty and change. And I hope that 2021 offers us all just as much room for meaningful education and growth, if not as much discomfort, as we've had this remarkable year. As we move into the new year, however, we will need to stay as current as ever about the emerging threats for 2021. So before a break for the holidays and before we return in January for season 2 on Navigating Transition, Steve and I will be back in 2 weeks with our final 2020 episode, in which Steve breaks down the threats we can expect to see in the coming year. In the meantime, we invite you to tune into our catalog of video and podcast episodes, all of which you can find at securityforum.org. If you feel like today's conversation was of value, you can subscribe to the audio feed wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd be so grateful if you'd recommend us. Growing our subscriber numbers helps us reach new audiences and helps us continue to bring you these timely discussions. You can always join in the conversation on our LinkedIn page at linkedin.com/company/information-security-forum, or get in touch directly through our website, where you can also download ISF's research, practical tools, and guidance related to discussions like these. The ISF podcast is produced by TalkBox and Tavia Gilbert. Music by Alexander Filipiak. Assistant producer, Katie Flood. Mix and master by Brian Barney. Thanks for listening.